Station number 13122, Mr. Ron Dinnins, reel 6.
Mr. Dinnin, reel 6. We were talking about your time. You'd rejoined your company at Blondus. You'd had this very bad 10-day blizzard. How bad was that blizzard in comparison to the bad weather the rest of the time? Because the weather wasn't good at all any of the time, was it?
It was after the blizzard, it got back to sort of normal conditions, which were at night, when a sentry had to go on duty, it could be anything up to 20, 23 degrees below zero. And life became very, very difficult then.
How did the sentries manage? I mean,
well, then, whilst they had these tropical coats, it still wasn't really sufficient. And we did get cases of frostbite, and the soldiers, the sentries actually, got under cover as much as possible.
What was the job of the sentries? Were they watching out for the Germans or just watching for the camper?
Oh, the main point was to watch for any movement from the sea. That was the main problem. Watching out in case there were any signs of an invasion.
There never were, obviously,
no,
throughout the period.
It never happened.
Did you have
never.
Trouble with sentries falling asleep, that sort of thing, in these conditions?
No. There was only once that happened, and I think we learned our lesson. It had been the practice to give a sentry a tot of rum before they went on duty. And on this one occasion, one of the sentries had his tot of rum and only walked a few yards before he collapsed. And it was obviously just being hit by the severe cold. And he didn't suffer any great harm, but it certainly had come as a shock to his system. And after that, we stopped giving tots of rum to the sentries.
So, what were your daily duties then at Blondus yourself?
My duties then with my platoon, the same with the other platoon commanders, were digging defences, digging trenches, making pillboxes, that sort of thing. And
this is the third set of defences you've been building.
Yes.
Were people getting tired of it? Or?
Oh, I managed to jolly my men along. I don't think they objected, because many of them had been coal miners at that time. And to them, it was just normal, everyday work. We did, of course, carry out little exercises.
What sort of thing?
Or military exercises, just to keep them toned up, having ordinary platoon training, weapon training. In fact, we had one, what we termed rather large exercise involving the artillery, and we were set out in a warlike situation in trenches. And it was decided to fire the guns, allowing for normal safety regulations, and even adding a little extra for safety. The artillery opened fire, and the guns immediately seized up with the cold. Plus the fact the shells landed behind us instead of ahead of us. We all got quite a shock.
The guns, so they were firing very short.
Very short indeed. Very short indeed. Although they had allowed enough...
They'd intended to make it...
The intention was they would fire over our heads. Instead of that, these two shells fell behind us.
Now, the guns freezing up like that, I mean, what was done? Was anything done as a result of that to try and stop that happening in it? Because that wouldn't be much use in action, real action.
No. The gunners obviously got quite a surprise, and as far as I could gather, during their sort of daily maintenance, used some type of mineral fat to keep the guns, as it were, in correct order. We didn't have occasion to use them again because we had moved on.
So the mineral fat was introduced to try and stop that happening.
Yes.
In Germany. Did
yes.
you have trouble with your own Bren guns, rifles?
Because I think mainly because they were a personal weapon, your normal rifle. Therefore, under the care of the soldier at all times.
With temperatures like that, did you have to be careful not to touch exposed metal with your hands, things like that?
Oh, yes. Most of the men had gloves or mitts, and there was no great problem, as far as I recall, with their personal weapons.
So you'd be supervising the men's digging and training, personal and platoon training. Any other jobs you were given or responsible for at that time at Blonders?
I was kept very busy on digging trenches, etc., because I seemed to have the flair for it. Naturally, I was given most of the difficult tasks. But the normal training had to continue to keep the men alert, and everything possible was done to keep them in that way.
Now, when you'd been at the first village, Bordery, you'd had just this four-hour day, ten till two. Did the day get longer and shorter as the day? Wouldn't the day get shorter as you moved into the deepest winter? Or did it?
No, it was the situation there was pretty much the same as I'd experienced. But it wasn't until March and April that the days began to lengthen. The hours of daylight increased.
Were there more opportunities for entertainment at Blonders for the men? With having a small Icelandic village rather than a hamlet.
Yes, some of them made friends in the village, but we had one hut given over to a recreation hut, and they had several games there, and I think covered the situation, more or less.
Were there a more variety of games than there had been?
Well, yes, we could... play football, or play with the football, that sort of thing, because the area was quite flat.
The transport was a problem, I believe, in the winter, generally transport.
Yeah.
Would you like to talk about that a bit? Because you used ponies, didn't you?
I personally was very fond of going for a pony ride. The Icelandic horse is... a wonderful beast, and I enjoyed going out riding. In fact, I had a rather unusual thing happened. One day when I was riding, my horse stumbled over a frozen stone which was quite unusual, but it happened, and I was thrown over the head of the horse. Unfortunately, when I landed, my foot was caught up in the stirrup, and I just couldn't release my foot. With some difficulty, I maneuvered my back and was able to undo the laces of my boot and eventually got my foot out of the boot. And the amazing thing was that this pony stood perfectly still during all this maneuvering. And I have the greatest respect for the Icelandic horse.
Where would you ride?
Or are you just to go round the coastline or go inland a little way?
What was the countryside like? I mean, could you give us
very, very sparse countryside, mostly covered in snow anyway. And whilst one could see in the distance the ice-covered glaciers, the local situation was small hills and open spaces. There wasn't the green grass of England. It was very sparse indeed.
Did you like it? I mean, did you find it an interesting Spartanness, or was it depressing?
Oh, I personally didn't object at all. In fact, I used to spend hours just gazing at the northern lights in the evening, which is a remarkable sight when you seem to be so close to it all. These gigantic rainbows flashing across the skies, the scene changing every second. It was most interesting and enjoyable experience to see the northern lights.
Now, one thing, there was a lack of accurate maps of the whole area of this northern Icelandic zone, and you got some survey people.
Yes. One of the problems when we arrived was the fact that they were very, very short of maps. And it was whilst I was at Borderi that a ship came out with personnel who were making new maps of the whole area of Iceland. And we had an unfortunate situation on one occasion when there was an argument over whether a road was a road or was it a river. The reason being that on the maps they were all done in black and white, and it wasn't easy to distinguish which was a road and which was a river. And on one occasion we had such an argument that I had to take off my boots and wade out into a river and had a camera used by one of my colleagues who took a snap of me standing in 2 feet of water and what should have been a road, to convince the people in headquarters that we were right.
So you'd be going off on expeditions to check features on maps. Another time you had a problem with water running across it. It was a road, but there was water running across it that had frozen. Could you tell us that story? Because that sounds pretty awful.
Yeah, well, it wasn't much of a problem to us. It was only when you wanted to make a journey that it was difficult. And I and a colleague set out one day to check one of the roads, and we came to a point where we were climbing up a very large hill and the road was frozen. The water had run down the mountainside and over the road and immediately over the cliffs. So I decided to chip away the ice from the road enough, wide enough to take the tyres of the truck. And this took us some considerable time, and we eventually got a little cut in the ice and managed to get the truck across a stretch of some 30 or 40 feet. But it was very precarious, and had one slip been made, the truck would have immediately fallen over a 200 feet high cliff. However, we've managed to get across.
You didn't have a driving license then either, did you?
I'd hadn't a driving license, but yeah. I could drive, but not very well. And it was a pretty hair-raising experience.
Was that one of the reasons that things like ponies, the Icelandic horses were used, that the roads did have problems like that?
Yes. This was quite a common thing where you got hillsides or mountains that the water would flow down the mountain and straight across roads and freeze. So it meant that communication was extremely difficult to get from one place to another.
Now, you held we're just really now running through various aspects of the time at Blonders. Mm-hmm. There was a cocktail party which you held for the Icelanders. Mm. That's an unusual thing to do. What caused you to want to do that as a company?
We felt our orders were from headquarters to be friendly with the Icelanders. So it was decided we would hold a cocktail party to enable us to get to know more people in the village of Blonders. So we decided on a cocktail party, and it was rather hilarious, as none of the Icelanders could speak English and none of us could speak Icelandic. So it was extremely difficult but jolly, because the situation caused us all one big laugh. But we managed, and at the end of the day, everyone went home very happy.
Were they still supplying you with food, or extras to your food, as they had in the hamlet? Mm.
Well, the only extras they could really give to us were fish, and we got ample supplies of fish and eggs. One particular Icelander used to visit us quite frequently, and for a couple of whiskies we would get a bucket full of eggs, and this helped us enormously.
Were they still giving you lamb? Would there be lamb?
Lamb was our main meat of the day.
You were still getting that. What about whale and seal meat?
Well, these were available if one wanted them. The Icelanders would willingly give supplies of whale meat, seal meat, that sort of thing. But it didn't go down very well with us. I don't think we cared much for it.
Why not? Was it the taste?
Or? The taste, I think one has to get used to it to like it. Some people like it, but I prefer not to eat it.
Now, you stayed at Blonders, just in this. Once you'd established this routine, you'd pretty well stick at that right through until the summer.
Yes.
Or were there any other events you can think of?
Well, there was so much to be done on the defensive side that there wasn't much else one could do.
Would you lengthen the outside working day as the day lengthened?
Yes. Well, in actual fact, we were able to give the men more recreational time than we had during the severe winter. And we were able to get about and visit places that we couldn't do during the midwinter period.
What kind of places?
Well, there was always plenty to see along the coastline. And
Just scenery, the dramatic scenery.
Just, very dramatic scenery. And the men, I think, mainly preferred to stay put in around the village. They could go to the local places.
Did any of them form relationships with local Icelandic women, or were they warned off as you had warned them off in the hamlet?
There was very, very little of building friendships, I think, with the villagers. They were, to get down to the very heart of the thing, they resented our being there in the first place. Although they were friendly, there was just that feeling of resentment, like I think all Ireland people feel towards invaders or visitors even. So it, whilst the friendship was slowly growing, there was no question of going into their houses and making friends with the families. It only happened during working periods, mainly.
Now, how long did you stay at Blunders? Because you eventually moved towards the end of the summer back to Reykjavik. Is there anything else that happened before that happened at all? Any other incidents?
I don't recall any main incidents. I was moved down into the south because we were building an airfield, and our companies were taken over by the Canadians.
By boat?
Yes. And we were put onto large working parties to build this new aerodrome at Keflavik.
Keflavik. Whereabouts is that?
That's in the very south of the island.
Further south than Reykjavik?
Oh, yes. Yes, a good few miles away from Reykjavik. It was in about September period when we had to move from Blunders, and we were taken by divisional transport, which was sent up, and the whole company was taken south.
By road?
By road. Now the roads, it's almost a wrong term to use, they were tracks rather than roads. And in some places, one had to move out at least 100 yards from the path to get across a certain piece of ground, which was probably very muddy, and the road just petered out, and there was massive deep ruts, anything 3 and 4 feet deep. So gradually it made it into a bulbous situation where each lorry made its own particular path as it went across. Then you had to go through some 60 miles of lava beds.
What was that like?
Which was a sight to see when you saw lumps of lava as big as a house. It was almost something like from outer space when you were driving through these miles and miles of lava. However, when we got down into the south, we were taken to different camps near Keflavik, and we were turned into just daily working parties. I know my battalion had to turn out.
So the whole battalion had gone. I mean, you'd been picked up from Blunders, but so had the other companies.
The other companies had also been picked up, and we all concentrated into two or three camps.
Now, you say your battalion had to...
We had to provide a working party of some 200 each day. It was broken into 8-hour shifts. And this, altogether, I think there were some 400 soldiers employed on each shift to get this airfield cemented and laid out, ready for the Americans coming to take over.
And you say the Canadians were there. What were they doing?
The Canadians were just sent there, really, as a very quick defensive role, and had set up various points, mainly in the Reykjavik area.
So they had nothing directly to do with you?
No.
So what was life like while you were on this this building job, the airstrip job?
Well, there it was purely work. Work and sleep.
So there was no training or military exercises? This was just, you were being used as working parties and nothing else?
At one period, I remember we were turned out for a very large military exercise. All branches of the army on the island were brought into one large exercise, and we spent some 2 days out sleeping on the mountainsides during the exercise.
What do you remember of it?
We were lucky in that we didn't have any rain, but it was extremely cold once you got onto a mountainside.
Even in the summer?
Even in the summertime. It was very, very difficult.
And what was the intention of the exercise, or as far as you could tell?
Purely, it was an exercise to have everyone involved in how they would take up the defence of the whole island. It was mainly included all the branches, headquarters of the army, and the different roles they were playing in connection with the gunners.
So to you were just being practiced moving around, really?
Yes.
They weren't... Did you have to make mock attacks on things, or was it
just... Oh, yes, there were mock attacks involving the different branches. The engineers brought into it anti-tank guns and the normal artillery of 25-pounder guns, laying minefields, that sort of military exercise.
And as far as you were concerned, it seemed to go all right?
Oh, yes. Just a normal army exercise that one would have in the UK, which we had all gone through. And everyone there, it was to help to get to know the people you were working with, I think.
Now, so, but that was an interlude in the airfield building.
Yes, yes.
And anything else while you were at Keflavik?
No, it was purely a system of working parties. I can't recall any specific change in the routine. Everyone was concentrating on the urgency of getting this airfield built.
Were the Icelandic population helping at all? Or?
Oh, yes. Mainly in the transport of materials. The big lorries were driven by the Icelanders, who were bringing such things as sand and cement coming by ship, which had to be transported from the docks onto the sites. That sort of normal contracting work.
Who would supervise? I mean, laying a concrete, presume it was a concrete runway, laying that sort of thing, would you be heavily supervised by the REs, or were you left?
Oh, there? Yes. This was, we just obeyed orders. The engineers were the people in charge, and were never off the job. The whole job was supervised.